All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we finally were able to find a time to get this episode together. Hunter is in Japan right now. I'm in New York.
Yes.
We're both super busy, but we had to come together and get this episode out before the NBA Finals. It's finally here. We got the Denver
Yep.
Nuggets taking on the Miami Heat. And we're going to talk all about it and give our predictions, give our analysis. But first, let's talk about the series that just concluded a couple of days ago, the Heat and the Celtics, which went to a game seven despite the Heat being up 3-0. We were on the verge of history being made as no team in NBA history has ever came back from a 3-0 deficit. And the Heat almost were the first team to sort of get that dishonor. So I guess, Hunter, let's just jump right in to talk about the games that the Celtics did win, games 4, 5, and 6. So in those games, like, what did you see from the Celtics? What do you think they did differently that they weren't doing in the first three games? And yeah, I mean, just talk to me about those games.
I mean, I think more so what I saw. I'm giving credit to the Celtics because they played their asses off in those games. I think game four and game five were mainly the Heat stepping off the gas a little bit because they're like, oh, we can go back game six, home court, whatever. Game four, they're like, oh, whatever. Like, we let them go, but there's no way we lose the series. I think game six was they're easily their best performance. Just a crazy ending to that game. I mean, Derek
My
White
God.
saved. Sorry, what?
I was just saying, oh my God, like
Yeah,
that
Derek White saved their season.
shot.
Like he in the moment, it was like, oh, it's over. Like the Heat really rallied back that quickly, and I mean, Derek White just silenced everyone. Like it was hard to tell what was going on. Like in that moment, like. I didn't know that he made the shot. I didn't even see the ball go in because it was just so crazy. And then the
Yeah.
whole Heat arena's cheering. They think they won the series. And no, with 0.1 seconds left on the clock, Derek White hits a game winner and sends the Heat back to Boston for a game seven, where at that point, all the talking heads are saying, oh, it's over. The Heat are going to get blown out. They're done for. And, I have always been a Heat fan. Supporter in the series. We both had the Heat in this series. I think originally when like our first round predictions, both of us thought Heat in seven, which is
Yeah,
crazy.
so we were
We thought
right.
that was going to be we thought that was going to be in the first round, but that happened now, which is crazy to think back on. But it definitely
Crazy.
didn't happen the way we expected it to happen. And I mean, aside from that moment, because I mean that's not the only thing that the Celtics did to get them in that position. I think in the first few games, I think Jason Tatum was great. I think, like, meaning games four, five, and six, played solid defense, did the dirty work, and he also got up a lot of shots, which I think was the difference for him between this game, those 3 games, and then game seven, where he only, I believe, took like 12 or 13 shots.
Yeah.
So I think it's that for him, it was volume. Game seven was a scrappy game. There was a lot of defense. So it's a different narrative in that game.
Yeah.
But even then, you're Jason Tatum. You can't be taking 12 shots.
I mean, and okay, and to his credit, I mean, we've seen what he did in the game seven in this exact playoffs. He holds the record now for most points in a game seven with what was it, 53?
Yeah,
Pretty incredible
just beating out
stuff.
Steph Curry a few days before.
Yeah, pretty incredible from Tatum. So we know he has it in him, but this Celtics team is just so inconsistent, and Tatum and Brown along with it. I mean, this series is just a perfect example of that. Three games, they look terrible. Three games, they look great, and then collapse at the finish line. And this Celtics team is terrible at closing out games and closing out series. I mean, think about it. Their past two series went to seven. They blew a ton of leads, right? In that game six that we were talking about, where Derek White saves their season. And also, can I just mention that is going to be one of the most forgotten shots in NBA history now because it didn't really amount to anything. But regardless, in that game, the Celtics were up 10 with like 4 minutes remaining, right? And then basically Jimmy Butler single-handedly brought them back in that game, got fouled on a three-point play, and got them up, I believe it was one. Or it was up, they were up two, sorry. Or no, up
Yeah,
one,
I
because
mean,
they won the
just
game with a
really
two.
quickly,
Sure.
Sorry, I just wanted to list the inconsistency of Tatum and Brown real quickly. In games one and two, Tatum is 30 plus points on over 50% from the field. Game three, he has 14 points on 33% shooting. Game four, he has a bounce back game, and they win that game, where he shoots another, over 30 points on 60% from the field. Then in games, in games five and seven, he has 20 or less points on bad efficiency again. And even in game six, he had 31 points, but he did it on 38% from the field. So that's just not very consistent at all coming from him. And then Brown is probably an even sadder story. I'm just checking the stats on StatMuse right
He
now.
had a
But Jalen
terrible
Brown,
series.
yeah,
I
he
don't need
did.
to
I mean,
check the
he has
stats to
22
tell you that.
points. Yeah, he shot in the entire series, he shot 41% from the field, 16% from three for this series on
Yeah.
43 shots, on 43 threes. So that means he's taking about, what, six threes a game, and he's making one. Like, that's just ridiculous. And obviously, that's not going to happen again, most likely, for Jalen Brown. We've seen him be the most consistent player on the Celtics team for pretty much the entire season, the majority of the postseason. Because usually Tatum is the guy who was fluctuating a lot, but it kind of reversed a little bit in the series, even though Tatum was still not super consistent.
I just think a lot of deficiencies in Jaylen Brown's game are being exposed in this postseason. I mean, he's a guy who has a very questionable handle, which leads to a lot of turnovers. He's also like makes some very questionable decisions on the offensive end. Like you'll just see some possessions where, they won't run any offense. It'll just be Jaylen Brown pull up. And if he makes it, great. But if he doesn't, then, it's just a wasted possession right there. Just a long three that amounts to nothing. And Jaylen Brown has a lot of those plays. Let me just give you a number right now. This postseason for Jaylen Brown, he had 63 assists total and 58 turnovers. Like, that's
Yeah,
a
that's
terrible
really bad.
ratio from one of your all NBA star players, right?
Especially a
And
guy who's supposed to be able to handle the ball.
so, exactly. And we've just seen, and Caleb Martin was even talking about it in an interview after the series. He said, yeah, we just wanted him to go left the whole series. That was our whole game plan for him. Come on, you're talking about an all NBA guy, and that their defensive scheme basically amounts to like how you would guard like a sixth grader who hasn't developed their left hand yet. What's going on here? So Hunter, I have a question. If you're the Boston Celtics, right? Jaylen Brown was on the all NBA team. So he qualifies for the 5-year Supermax, $300 million, right? Do you offer him that contract? Because in the past few years, I mean, we're still talking about an all NBA player. Are you really going to throw that away? What do you think?
Look, we're talking about a core of Tatum and Jason Brown or Jaylen Brown that has gone to the NBA Finals. They have been to the Eastern Conference Finals twice or three times now. This is a team that we know can play winning basketball. They just haven't quite gotten over the hump yet. If you are the Celtics, are you willing to throw out that core and take a risk to try and get a star you think would fit better? Like, it's about would, it's not is going to. If I'm the Celtics organization, I think you kind of are obligated to give Jaylen Brown the Supermax contract. Yes, it's a risk in some senses, but I think it's more of a risk to go and try and trade for a different star where the chemistry hasn't been built there over 4 or 5 plus years. And you know that this team every single year is going to be in the postseason competing, probably at least getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know this team can do that. And you put great role players this season. So maybe what you need instead of having some great role players is get a role player who can also be the voice of reason. Like, this might sound really stupid to say, but sometimes a guy like a Patrick Beverley can be the difference between your team having a level head and being like out of the postseason entirely. I mean, look at the Minnesota Timberwolves 2 years ago. Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards and like D'Angelo Russell are not leaders. None of them were leaders. Anthony Edwards is developing into a leader, but he's still very young. And very clearly, this team was lacking some kind of voice of reason from a player's perspective. The coaches can only do so much. So I think adding a guy like that, like, I don't know, like the Heat have Kevin Love. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's older, like, so they don't need that as much. But like,
Udonis
there's
has them,
always a
I
guy.
mean.
Udonis Haslem's a great example. I don't know why I didn't think of Udonis, but Udonis Haslem is there. You have like Rondo historically has done that for teams. So I think the best teams that win championships usually have one of those guys, especially when the stars are so young. And the league in general has gone away from having that kind of like almost fatherly, I wouldn't call it fatherly figure, but like an older figure who's been in the league for a long time. I feel like teams have gone away from having that just to get talent. And I think sometimes saving that 15th roster spot for a guy who's just going to be able to coach your players from a player perspective is really important.
I mean, I'm actually going to disagree with you here. I think that, you do have a guy like Al Horford who's 36. He's incredibly experienced, right? He's been to conference finals, deep runs in the playoffs, et cetera.
He had a
Like
horrible
he's
series
been,
too.
yeah, he, I mean, okay, I actually will say he had a bit of a bounce back series, at least from a shooting perspective, but overall, not what you want. But at this point, he's 36. He's not going to be like a key player anymore. I'll say this much about Jaylen Brown and Tatum. You hit it the nail right on the head when talking about how Tatum and Brown went to the conference finals, what, three out of the past 5 seasons, went to the NBA finals. You can't take that for granted if you're an NBA organization. You could take a gamble on like another star player to pair alongside Jason Tatum, but you don't even know if you're going to be able to like if that's just going to blow up in your face. And I don't know if that's a risk you're willing to take if you're the Celtics.
Kyrie back to Boston.
I mean, a move like not exactly that move, but a move similar to that, like a Trae Young to
Yeah,
Boston move.
exactly.
That's a move that could blow up in your face, and you could be a perennial first round exit team. And I don't think that's a chance you really want to take. So I think, look. Is that contract going to hurt a little bit? Is it a bit of an overpay? Yes. Will Jaylen Brown be making $66 million in 5 years? Yes. Does that suck? Yes. However, should you do it? I also think yes, because you know that you're going to have like basically 5 years of being a contender year after year, right? And I think this team is going to get over that hump eventually. Joe Mazzulla, if you decide to keep him as the coach, which I think they will, is going to get more experience. He's going to learn how to coach these guys. He's going to understand the responsibility and the sort of pressure that comes with being a head coach in the NBA and with one of the biggest organizations too. And I think, you keep shifting the pieces around. All it takes is the right opportunity, and you're going to make it there back to the finals and they can win it all. So I wouldn't tear up a group this special and a pairing this special. Tatum is 25, Brown is 26. I mean, come on. That like you can't just tear that all apart because you're not getting over the hump. I think you got to give it a few more seasons at least.
I agree. I think at least two more seasons. If in two more seasons this team has not won the championship, I think we could be talking about something different. Because
Sure.
I think by that point, this team is they're in their prime, 28, 27 years old. They have lots of experience in the postseason. I think they should try and keep the role players they have on this team pretty much the same, except for maybe like Al Horford, you could keep on the team, but you need to have a real center. Rob Williams is going to get older, so he could be maybe your starting center at some point. But that, there's a lot of questions of spacing and certain things there. Like, you have a lot of good role players. Marcus Smart is incredible for you, Defensive Player of the Year. You have Malcolm Brogdon. We haven't even talked about him. He was injured for much of this or much of the series.
Yeah.
So he didn't really get to play. And he's a guy can be 50, 40, 90. Very smart player. Is low turnover kind of guy. Derek White, also, he was probably one of their most consistent players in the series. They have
For
great role
sure.
players, good defensive guys. I think maybe they lack a little bit at the backup forward positions, but that's okay because you have Tatum and Brown there. So.
And look at this. They had a guy who was also hurt, who I think could have actually been a big contributor, and that's Danilo Gallinari. I think that
Yes.
his veteran presence, his shooting, his honestly, his ability in the post as well, I think could have been a big help to them. And his size, because
He's also a
this is a
lot
guy
older
who's,
now.
yeah, but still, he was
He's
never a guy who
he's a
relied on his.
35.
Yeah, but he's not a guy that relies on his athleticism. He's a guy who
That's
can
true.
spot up from three, who can go to work down low in the post. I like his game a lot, and I actually like his fit in this team. But I want to say one thing. For games 4 through 6, I think we saw pretty clearly that this Celtics team was like definitively better than the Heat, right? In pretty much every regard. I think their stars are better when they're hitting. I think they're a deeper team. I think they have better shooting, better length, better defensively. And so, like, those three games, besides game six, really, at the end, were not really close. Boston Celtics were pretty much in the driver's seat the whole time. And so I understand
The
the
Heat one-off
disappointment
mentality.
for the Celtics, definitely. And they just had more heart. They were hustling. But in those four to, in those games, 4 to 6, how did the Celtics win? They beat them on the offensive glass. They outshot them, and they forced a lot of turnovers, leading to transition baskets, right? That's all, in my opinion, like personnel. Shooting, you come from having elite shooters, all throughout your rotation, right? Everybody on this team is a competent shooter. And then the size of Rob Williams and Al Horford leading to those second chance points, and then the defense of guys like Smart and White creating disruption and causing turnovers, leading to transition baskets. So I wouldn't count out the Celtics team. It was a bit of a disappointing end for them, but look, I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking about them in the same exact spot next year. But I mean, we do have to credit the Heat and especially guys like Caleb Martin.
Yeah, let's talk about Caleb Martin for a second, actually. In this series, he just absolute masterclass from him. He averaged 19, 6, and 2, with, I believe, like not even a single turnover per game. And here were his shooting splits: 60% from the field, 47% from three, and 88% from the free throw line. So I'd call
Unbelievable.
that better than 50, 40, 90. I mean, definitely better than 50, 40, 90. And you were just talking about, I want to make that point, like, this Celtics series team in games 4, 5, and 6 did look that much better than the Heat. And I think part of it was games 1 through 3, shots weren't falling for them. Well, shots were falling for the Heat. And then games 4, 5, and 6, that reversed. And then back in game 7, it was kind of the same story as it was in games 1 through 3. So I think it was just a matter of the Celtics kind of being cold this entire series, especially, I mean, like, if Jaylen Brown was able to shoot 35% from three in the series, just league average, they would have won. Like, I
Yeah, but
really do think, obviously, that's a big if, and
yeah.
that's all credit to the Heat, because the Heat defense was what made that so hard. The zone they play forced the Celtics to take very tough shots. But I
Don't even
think
think
that.
it's part of the zone. I think it's also just his shot selection. I think that you will look at what the kind of the shots he's taken. These just like no hesitation pull up threes early in the shot clock. Those are not high percentage shots.
No, they're not. But I think part of why that they're even taking those shots in the first place is that Heat zone is so intimidating. I think
Sure,
that Jason
sure.
Tatum was doing it too, and he was just making a few more of them. They were either being forced to take long contested threes, or they were getting the rebound and getting a decent putback. Like, that those were the shots they were getting. And especially when you, like, we'll get into Denver series, but when you don't have a big man like Jokic, like, or just any big man, like a skilled big man, it's very hard to overcome that zone because they're playing the same size.
I will say
And
though, speaking of size, like, because when you bring that up, we have to talk about Bam Adebayo here. Because I
yeah.
think even though the Heat won the series, I think Bam Adebayo is incredibly disappointing. I mean, every single series, we talk about him being the X factor, him having to step up, average above 18 points, play at the potential that we've seen from him, have those high scoring games. When was the last time you remember Bam Adebayo scoring 30 points in a playoff game? Because I can't remember the last time. I don't even know if he's ever done
I
that in
think
his
last
career.
year, I think, yeah, it was. Remember game 7 against the Celtics last year where he had like a 30-point triple double or something? It was a
Right, but
full
like
year ago. It was a
we
full
have
year ago.
exactly. And like he needs to be having amazing performances because so much of the Heat's offense relies on him. He's all their size and such a crucial anchor on the defensive end. And what do we see in game, like specifically game 7? How many times did we see him posting up a guy who's maybe 4 or 5 inches smaller than him, 40 pounds, 50 pounds lighter than him, and he misses the post up or like just plays incredibly soft? I think that Bam Adebayo suffers from like the DeAndre Ayton sort of almost like settling for just playing incredibly soft and just not willing to put your body on the line, get down low, get physical, and really like take over games. And look, I am just praying for this man's soul when he has to guard Nikola Jokic, because Jokic is gonna do
Yeah.
some serious damage. But
We'll get into that series in a second, but I did want to keep talking about Bam Adebayo a little bit. He only
for sure.
like Tatum had 12 shots in game 7. We're like, "Come on, man, you need to take more shots than that." That's how many shots Bam Adebayo averaged in the series. Like that's pretty low for a guy who's supposed to be your second star, supposed to be an all-star, has been an all-star in the past, and can take over games offensively. So, I think he needs to be taking between 15 to 18 shots a game for this team to be successful, especially against Jokic. I mean, we've seen Jokic, he, played way better defense against the Lakers, obviously shutting down Anthony Davis for much of the time. But I think maybe Bam Adebayo's low center of gravity and style of play might be a little bit better than against Jokic and Anthony Davis's, because I think that the matchup with Anthony Davis is very hard for him because he has a higher center of gravity than Jokic, and Jokic has a lot of weight on him. But I think Bam Adebayo is a little more built, a little more physical than Anthony Davis is. Like, he can be more physical because he's more size, and he has a lower center of gravity than Nikola Jokic. So he could use that to his advantage. And I think the only way I see the Heat winning that series is through Bam Adebayo having to be that guy along with everybody else. They have to do everything they did right against the Heat on top of Bam Adebayo stepping up, in my opinion.
Agreed. I think
Or, sorry,
also
against the Celtics.
Bam Adebayo, like one element of his game that unlocks so much for him is when his mid-range shot is falling. But it's so inconsistent. How many times do you see this guy pull up from the elbow or pull up from the free throw line and just hit back rim? And it's just when he misses those shots, his confidence goes down, and that leads to poor performance in the post. But I would argue in this series, just mentioning like the 12 shots that he was attempting per game, I would argue that he wasn't even a top three player for the Heat. I think if I had to list the best players for the Heat in this series, I would probably go Caleb Martin at one. I think that through and through, he was the most consistent player, their best scorer. And although he wasn't all that on the defensive end, I think that his offense really sort of like kept them afloat and got them over the hump when their offense was looking completely stagnant at times. Then Jimmy Butler at two, and then Gabe Vincent at three. I would put Bam at four there. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I maybe would switch Jimmy Butler and Caleb Martin. I think, although we're Caleb Martin, I think we're placing him so high because it's surprising. If you just look at the numbers, what the players are doing, Jimmy Butler is clearly the best player on this team and had the best series. In a lot of ways, Caleb Martin saved them, but I think obviously if you don't have Jimmy Butler, if he's not putting up what he is, you don't even have anyone to save the team. So I'm going to switch Jimmy and Caleb there, but I would agree that those two were definitely the best players, and then Gabe Vincent right after that.
Okay, that's fair for sure. And then so you would agree with the Jimmy Butler Eastern Conference Finals MVP selection.
I would. I think that it's not like an Andre Iguodala case for Finals MVP in 2015 where he defended the best player and shut him down. This is a case where, like, I think the narrative is almost like, oh, this undrafted player who really didn't have anything before this year is putting up 19 points a game in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, that's the narrative. It's not this guy is literally the best anchor for this team, because clearly it was Jimmy Butler. Games 1 through 3, Jimmy Butler was insane. And yeah, he had some dud games, but I think he also wasn't trying super hard in some of them. And I mean, listen to Jimmy Butler's averages versus Caleb Martin's. Jimmy is averaging 25, 8, and 6 on 42, 35, 83 shooting splits. That's not the most efficient, but that's fairly efficient. And he's averaging 6 more points, 2 more rebounds, and 4 more assists. And obviously, he's playing better defense than Caleb Martin is by far.
That's fair, but I think that a lot of those stats are kind of inflated from the first three games in this series. I think the next four, for a majority of the series, I would say that Caleb Martin was like the focal point of the Heat offense. And then in the biggest moment in game 7, when it was do or die, what did we see from Jimmy Butler, right? Versus what did we see from Caleb Martin? Caleb Martin, at points during the third quarter, was getting the ball every single time, genuinely like a superstar player. And he was scoring at will, right? He powered them through that game and basically created it or caused it to be a blowout. And I'll admit, it's very close. You could go either way on this, and that's actually how the voters went. I think Butler won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP by one vote, like out of, I think, 8 people voted, and he
If
got it by
Caleb
one.
Martin won, I wasn't mad. It, like, if he won, I wouldn't be like, oh, that's outrageous. It has to be Jimmy Butler. So I would agree that it could have really gone either way. But I think also you have to look at like game six. Jimmy Butler single-handedly brought them back into that game. And if it weren't for a very fortunate shot by Derrick White and a good put up by Marcus Smart to even get them in that position, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. It would have easily been Jimmy Butler. And obviously that's not what happened. But Jimmy Butler also carried them at many points in the series just as much as Caleb Martin did.
I disagree, honestly, with game six, right? Caleb Martin, 21 and 15 on 50% from three, 53% from the field, right? He was their entire offense, pretty much, or their primary focal point on offense for basically the entire game. Jimmy Butler was having one of those games where he decides to be super passive, drive and kick every single time. Yes, Jimmy Butler contributes more in the defensive end. We know this, right? We know that he's going to get those steals. We know that he's going to make those smart plays on the defensive end.
Jimmy Butler had 18 steals in the series. 18.
But I just think that, look, he had just this tendency throughout the series to just disappear. And you're like, where's this playoff Jimmy that we're talking about? But Caleb Martin was consistent through and through. And that's why he gets my vote, just for that consistency aspect and the fact that he shined when it mattered most. And I mean, that's all. I could go either way on this,
Okay.
but that's just where I was.
Yeah, we don't need to debate it too much because, like, I don't think either of us would have been mad if either of them gotten it. Like, you're not
Definitely,
like,
yeah.
this is stupid that Jimmy Butler got it. You just want to give
Yeah.
your props to Caleb Martin, which I
Yeah,
totally get.
definitely not. So let's move on and
So.
talk about this upcoming NBA Finals with Game One tomorrow in Denver. So we have the Denver Nuggets versus the Miami Heat, right? The first time in history a one seed is playing eight seed. And look, you look on paper, you see one seed playing an eight seed. This is going to be a complete stomp. And Vegas tends to agree. The Nuggets are the second biggest finals favorite in the last 16 seasons at -400. Fun fact, the 2018 Warriors against that Cavs team were -1,075 favorites, which is
Well,
unbelievable.
Vegas got that one right.
They definitely did.
Vegas. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Hunter, I guess, first of all, do you kind of agree with Vegas here? Do you think that this is a very lopsided series and that the Heat are major underdogs, or do you think this is closer than what you're going to expect?
Look, when you look at this team at face value, you have to look at what Jokic did or this historic Nuggets run and I think still how much people are underrating this team as a one seed. Like, this is probably the most underrated one seed in NBA history. And I think they're finally getting the recognition now that they beat the Lakers, which is dumb because they only got the recognition after they beat the Lakers because the Lakers are the big market team with the big names. So they've been doing this the entire season and they're finally getting their flowers for it. So I do think that this is a fair for Vegas to say that they should be the absolute better team. They have amazing role players, an amazing coach, an amazing system, and very clearly the guy who's going to be the best player in this series, and Nikola Jokic. I do think it will, at the same time, I think it will be closer than we expect because I think just as much of a hard time Jokic is going to give the Heat, I think Jimmy Butler is going to give a very hard time to this Nuggets team. I mean, they have a lot of wing defenders, but I think that Jimmy Butler really turns on the gas when he needs to. And I think more so than the Celtics series, we saw in games one through three, the Heat really, really turned it up. I mean, we're talking, they put full steam ahead. Jimmy Butler was full steam ahead. And coming into the series, it's the NBA Finals. Jimmy Butler knows how hard it is to get here. He may think this is the last opportunity I'll ever get in my career to be here. I need to get that ring. So I think that Jimmy Butler really is going to have a great series. We saw what he did in the bubble. I mean, he what had a 50-point triple-double in the NBA Finals. Just absolutely ridiculous. So I think people are underrating what the Heat can do, but I think the Nuggets are at a properly placed value.
Okay, so you think that the Nuggets are legitimate favorites in this one?
Yeah, they're definitely legit favorites, but I think people are still underrating the Heat, and they've underrated them this entire postseason.
I'll say this much. When you look at the run the Nuggets have been on, and specifically the teams that they've played, every single team has had a star or superstar level center, right? You had the Timberwolves in the first round who had Karl-Anthony Towns, DeAndre Ayton in the second round, Anthony Davis in the conference finals. And what did Jokic do to every single one of them? He dismantled them. He demolished them. He made them look like they were scrubs, essentially. And so do I think that Bam Adebayo, after seeing him in this playoff run right here from the Heat, is going to have a different fate? Absolutely not. I think that this is going to be an incredibly lopsided matchup. I think Jokic is going to have a phenomenal series. Probably going to average another 30-point triple double.
That
And
would
I
be
think
great.
that he's just going to take over games. And it's going to be incredible to watch. So I'm very much on board with the Nuggets as favorites here. I think that, the Heat have not even an uphill battle to climb here. They have like a damn near a vertical battle. I think it's going to be incredibly hard for them to even take a game in this series. I think I agree with you about Jimmy Butler, and I think that he's going to have some phenomenal performances where he just puts the team on his back. But I've just seen I don't know. Okay, actually, I'm going to stick with that take. I was going to say I saw him just sort of disappear in the Celtics series, but that wasn't when the pressure was on. He had room to work with where
Exactly.
he could kind of coast. But every single time the pressure's been on Jimmy, he's risen to the occasion and exceeded what everyone thought he could do. So I think that the Heat are going to take a game just purely based off Jimmy Butler and what he is able to do on both ends of the floor and just how he's able to dominate every aspect of the game. But I think that this Nuggets team is just better through and through. I think we haven't even mentioned Jamal Murray, who is on an incredible run as well. I mean, talk about a guy who missed an entire season and came back and has just been lighting up these playoffs from everywhere. He's just having, I think he's shooting like 50, 40, 90 in these playoffs. He's going bonkers in this playoff run.
I will say that I think of the perimeter defenders to guard Jamal Murray that the Nuggets have faced so far. I mean, they face the Timberwolves. They don't really have any perimeter defenders. They face the Suns, who's guarding him, Chris Paul. I mean, like, they don't really have anyone either. And then or Devin Booker was guarding him at some points, but also Devin Booker's a subpar defender. And like the Lakers, it's Dennis Schroder and Austin Reeves, who are decent defenders, but cannot keep up with Jamal Murray, no question. I think that this Heat team has the best defenders on the perimeter, and I think part of this series is like absolutely the coaching. I think we're seeing possibly the two best coaches in the league match up here, and Mike Malone and Eric Spoelstra. I think they
Sure,
both
yeah.
have some of the most incredible defensive and offensive systems, and they really play pure basketball, team basketball, that both of them do. And I think I'm very excited for the coaching matchup and the actual basketball aspect of this. So I would tend to agree with you, but I think the real question for me here is whether the Heat can take games or not, is how well does this Heat zone prevent Nikola Jokic from getting offensive rebounds? I think that's the big question mark for me, because we saw in the Celtics series, the Celtics got a lot of offensive boards just off of long shots and off of just random bounces and stuff like that. And I think if Jamal Murray is putting up shots from the perimeter, and if even if they don't go in, I think Nikola Jokic, it will be very easy for him to get in there and get a putback if it doesn't go in, because they don't have any size to match him.
Yeah,
So
I
I want to
mean,
know
even
what are the Heat going to do to prevent that?
beyond Jokic, I mean, look at the other players on this team. There's a lot of length and a lot of size. You got 6'10" Michael Porter Jr. I think Aaron
Aaron
Gordon's like
Gordon.
6'9", right? But
Yeah,
he
and
has a
he
long
jumps.
wingspan, and he jumps at the gym. Bruce Brown also like pretty long wingspan, and these
ACP,
are
like 6'7", like a 6'8" wingspan kind of guy. Or maybe
KCP
he's
is not
6'6".
6'7".
Okay, so yeah, no, he's probably like 6'5", 6'6", but still,
Yeah.
he's tall. He's
Yeah,
big.
no.
I mean,
He,
and then you look
yes.
at, let's look at this role player versus role player matchup, because I did want to talk about this. We talk about KCP, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., and Bruce Brown. And then I want to talk about Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin. I mean, there's a lot of guys for the Heat you could talk about, but I think Kyle Lowry is also an important player. Duncan Robinson, even. Is Tyler Hero returning?
He
Is
will
this
be
a
back. Yeah,
question?
Tyler Hero is going to be
Yes.
playing.
Which, do you think this will
So,
be detrimental to the Heat?
no, I actually think that they're really going to value shot making. I mean,
Mm-hmm.
Hero is a guy who I think, I mean, he injured his non-shooting hand, so I don't think it's going to affect his game too much. I think he's going to come back and have an immediate impact, but I honestly don't think it's going to be too much of an advantage. And also, it could hurt in some aspects, not because he's rusty or because the injury is affecting his game, but because Tyler Hero has always been a bit of a liability on the defensive end. And I think when you're playing elite perimeter guys like Jamal Murray, or just, guys who can take it to the cup just as good as they can shoot it, like KCP, then I think that, Tyler Hero could be played off the floor maybe. But
Yeah,
let,
I mean
yeah,
it's
so
very possible, especially if he keeps getting switched on the Jamal Murray. Part of that Heat zone will make it easier for the Nuggets to switch Jamal Murray onto him.
sure.
And another thing is this Celt we saw when the Celtics played this Heat team, part of the issue for them was just like they kept having to take tough shots. They just all these really tough shots, just chucking the ball up and hoping it goes in. We know for a fact that this Nuggets team makes those shots, makes those really tough shots. Nikola Jokic does it all the time. Jamal Murray does it all the time. Hell, even Michael Porter Jr. is the guy who probably does it the most. So, I mean, I do worry for this Heat team in some aspects. I know I'm a big Heat fan, but my brain has to tell me, look, this Nuggets team is just a superior team. I mean, their star is just a more dominant player, and it's a very bad matchup for the Heat when you look at like the actual, like just player by player. It's really tough for them. I think the Celtics have a better construction for their roster to deal with the Nuggets than the Heat do.
I agree. I think that if the Celtics were here, we would be looking at a much more interesting matchup. But unfortunately, I just think that the Nuggets are deeper. Their superstars match up better.
I don't think they're
I mean,
deeper. I think that's a mistake. I would
don't
disagree.
know.
I think you can make an argument that their top role players are better than the Heat's top role players, but deeper, no question, the Heat are deeper. I mean, really, you have to look at this Nuggets team. They play seven people a game, and their sixth and seventh man play a combined 20 minutes. They play their starters the entire series, which I actually do like that Mike Malone trusts his starters and they know when they need to sit. But I mean, you look at this Heat team. They're playing a very much more balanced roster as far as how many guys are on the floor, and they have a lot of players who can do damage to you. And I think that's part of their system is their guys work themselves until exhaustion, work super hard on the floor, and then they get a few minutes of rest time. Whereas I think the Nuggets are play a more consistent, paced type of basketball that allows them to play their starters pretty much the entire game.
I mean, look, to run like a 7 or 8 man rotation this late in the playoffs is not like absurd. I think
That's
that
not unheard of, but typically your six man especially would get like 30 minutes a game. Their six man, I believe, is it Bruce Brown who's their six
yeah,
man?
it's Bruce Brown.
Yeah,
But
he's getting like 14 minutes a game, not even.
look, I
So
think
what I'm
that
saying is
in some
who else gets minutes? Christian Braun, like
Jeff
he's their
Green,
rookie. Jeff Green
I
does
mean,
not get minutes.
yes, he
Jeff
does.
Green he's gotten zero playing time. If he's gotten any playing time, it's been garbage time.
No, he's definitely played. He played game three against the Lakers, like 20 plus minutes.
Okay, well, my point is typically when you look at this Nuggets box score, what you're seeing is they've played their starters each 40 plus minutes, and then their sixth and seventh man have a combined 30 minutes, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. That I'm not like beating up on the Nuggets for it. I'm just saying the Heat are deeper.
Okay, I'll concede that one to you. But that kind of, when we're just talking about the minutes played, it made me think how much more mileage is on the Heat players' bodies and mental right now, right? Having
That's
to
the
go
important
all the
question.
way through two play-in games, then, they had to work their way through the Bucks, which was a bit of a cakewalk. Then, had to play what, six games against the Knicks, and then a seven game slog against the Celtics. They got to be weary right now. And the Nuggets, on the other hand, they've just been coasting through the NBA playoffs. They swept the Lakers. They've had like a week and a half off to just sort of get ready, get prepared, watch film. So
Yeah,
I
that could
think
be good
that
and be bad
aspect
though, that they've had a week off.
that
I
you
will
think
say I'm
they're.
not worried about it being bad for them. I'm not worried about them being rusty. But I will say, to the detriment of the Heat, they went up 3-0, which allowed the Nuggets to be like, oh, the Heat are definitely going to win this series. Let's only scout the Heat. Like, I feel like they've definitely been scouting the Heat for way longer than since yesterday. Like,
Right.
they've been doing their homework on the Heat for a long time. They know they've been able to watch the zone, know exactly how they're going to play, and they can assume what they're going to try and do to get Nikola Jokic out of the paint. So I think that the Nuggets have a large advantage, clearly, and I think that's reflected in Vegas. That's reflected in how we've been talking about them. So I think we're ready to give our predictions for who is going to win the
I
NBA
think we're going
Finals
to have the
MVP.
same prediction. It's like such a problem.
Okay,
What?
I want to hear your prediction.
Okay, because I'm going to say Jimmy Butler is going to win them a game, or maybe it's a combination of a couple of role players going off. Maybe Hero comes back for a big 25-point outing. Vincent has a great game. Caleb Martin has a, Michael Jordan-esque game, as he tends to do. So I'm going to give the Heat at least one, but I think that's all they're going to get. I got the Nuggets winning in five.
I got Nuggets in six. I think that probably they'll take either one or both games at home, and maybe they'll take one on the road. I think the Heat could really come out firing and take either one or game one or two, maybe tie up the series 2-2, and then the Nuggets just steamroll from there. But I would agree that this is going to be fairly lopsided, and I think the two games that they would win would be like between like 3 and 5 point, like very close, narrow victories.
Yeah.
And I feel like the games that the Nuggets could win, you could see a 12, 14, 20-point loss from the Heat. Like, I think it could be that kind of series.
We could see DeAndre Jordan minutes in the NBA Finals, which would be honestly a human
DeAndre
rights
Jordan's gonna get a
violation.
ring, bro. DeAndre Jordan's finally gonna get his ring. Actually, I have one more quick, or I want to talk about a few more things real quick.
Sure,
But
yeah.
in the case that Nikola Jokic has a dominant series, like let's say he has averages another 30-point triple double, becomes the first player to do it for an entire postseason, like starting to beat Wilt's records, that sort of deal, and he gets his ring, his finals MVP. Does he have a better career at this point in time if he wins his ring than Dirk Nowitzki?
Oof, then Dirk, that's tough.
And
I
we're
mean,
talking about Dirk as a top 15, 20 player in NBA history. So are we putting Nikola Jokic, if he gets back-to-back MVPs and a ring, does he get crowned higher than Dirk Nowitzki?
it's hard to say right at this point in his career. I would say no, just because of, his career still ongoing, and I think that he has a lot left to prove. I think that you can't underestimate Dirk's longevity, what he was able to do. Also, having arguably the toughest playoff run in NBA history, I think we gotta amount like we gotta talk about that. Going through Kobe, LeBron, the Spurs in the same playoff run is unheard of. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns and 38
The
year old
hobbled
LeBron,
sons.
yeah, like those don't really compare to Kobe when he's in his prime, LeBron when he's in his prime against the Heat, big three. That's and you still have the Spurs dynasty there. Like, it's incredible what he was able to do there. So I would say no, but he does have the potential for sure. And I think if the Nuggets win, just in terms of legacy, like an interesting conversation that we're gonna have to start having soon is, or as their careers start to play out, is the Giannis versus Jokic debates, like who is better all time? Because That's going to start to become a legitimate question.
Both of them are back-to-back MVPs, each then having won a ring for a team that had historically not had one in a very long time or never had one. I think the debates will start between Dirk and Jokic. I believe Dirk holds that t title for now, and he will for most of Jokic's career. But I think the debates will start if they win. One more
Definitely.
thing I wanted to talk about as well when it comes to this sort of NBA Finals. There's five different teams now who will have won the NBA Finals in the past 5 years, being the Lakers in 2020. Before them, it was the Raptors. Then after, sorry, after the Lakers, it was the Bucks, then the Warriors, and now either the Heat or the Nuggets. So, what do you think that says about the NBA now, having so many different teams in the mix? And we haven't even talked about, those teams that have made it to the finals have also been different. We've seen the Warriors there multiple times. We've seen the Heat now twice, but we've also seen teams like Phoenix. So what do you think it says about how there's been a big mix of teams now reaching the finals?
I mean, it's great to see for the league. I think that it's always good when you have these different organizations who are able to be competitive and make their way to the NBA Finals and pave new ground. Denver is a team, as an organization, that has never been to the NBA Finals. And so I think it just goes to show how competitive the league is. We talk about how there's more and more talent every single year, and I think that, if you want to look at the best example of this, look no further than the Miami Heat, who are running, what, seven, or who have, seven undrafted players that are on their team and play some of those guys significant minutes in the playoffs. These are guys that weren't even drafted, and they're so talented, they're taking over playoff games. So, I mean, the level of competition has really never been higher. During the offseason, we are going to talk about the state of the game as it is, because there's been some really interesting comments made by guys like Jeff Van Gundy about just the sort of state of the game. But I think in terms of competitiveness and in terms of talent, we might be at an all-time high.
No, I agree. I'm very happy. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, these ratings are going to suck. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you saw some of the higher ratings in NBA history for this series. Not necessarily because of, like, I think it's a two-way street, because you're going to see a lot of new excited fans that their team is finally here, or surrounding states. Like, we might see a lot of people tune in from, like, Colorado or in Utah, and states in around there that typically wouldn't really have seen fans in that area. I mean, look, you don't have the biggest market playing in the West, but it's an exciting series. Two of the best coaches, the best player in the league versus the best team basketball in the league. I think that's still an exciting storyline, even if the Lakers or the Celtics aren't in it.
Here's one aspect about the whole streaming conversation, or not streaming, sorry, the whole ratings conversation that I think a lot of people miss. Out of all the major sports leagues, the NBA has the youngest sort of audience. Like, more young people watch the NBA than any other sports league. And the way they consume it primarily is through social media. You look at impressions on social media for the NBA versus any other sport, and it kind of blow them out of the water, right? Because I think that basketball is sort of a sport that is conducive to those sorts of things. And also, older people are more likely to watch television. That's just a fact. So you might have your grandpa and your dad watching, full NFL games every Thursday and Sunday, but not every kid is watching full NBA games, right? They would much rather watch the highlights on YouTube or, catch a couple crazy Instagram clips. And finally,
Also, think of how many people. Go
I
ahead,
just
sorry.
want to mention, we gotta acknowledge the prevalence of illegal streaming. People are
I was going
watching
to talk
these
about that.
things illegally, and even Mark Cuban acknowledged that. I don't know, did you see his tweet?
Especially for. No, I didn't. But especially, think about it, especially in the younger generation where people aren't being able to afford cable. Even, let's say, You don't live with your parents anymore. You're in your mid-20s. Why are you going to pay $100 a month for cable when you can just watch, you get Netflix or you get Hulu or whatever, and you just go on top streams and watch the basketball game. Like, you can just
Whoa,
do that.
don't give away the streams.
Oh, they definitely don't know they exist. Ooh. No, but you know what I'm saying is there's definitely people doing that kind of thing. And, myself included. I'm not gonna deny that I don't watch on illegal
Hunter,
streaming sites.
you just admitted
No,
to a
bro,
crime.
listen. Listen, listen. I have Spectrum. I watch the Laker games when I can, right? But some of the games, the national TV games or whatever, I don't get on the even on that, I don't get on cable. So I'm not gonna, why am I gonna pay even more money to have to get the NBA pass when I can just, okay, tune in the top streams, and the top streams stream doesn't have ads. It gives me a view of what the fans are doing, which is more entertaining than watching the commercials. So I think the NBA will have to come up with creative ways to get around that. But what can they really do? Pirating is always going to be out there.
Yeah, they really gotta simplify the viewing process because, I would be like my family and I, we pay for Apple TV, so we get access to a number of channels. So I can watch all the nationally televised games, but then there's blackouts, right? Where it's a game I really want to watch, Lakers versus like Celtics on national television, and I can't watch because there's a media blackout. What's up with that, I think that those are aspects that may be out of the NBA's control, but they do hurt the consumer's willingness to pay for these products. And at the end of the day, we talk about the NBA in so many, in so many different contexts. Like we talk about it as a business, as an entertainment platform, as, a competitive sort of a vessel, vehicle, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, it's just a sport, it's a game, and we watch it for fun. And so I expect this NBA Finals to be fun. I'm going to really enjoy watching it, and we'll see if our predictions come true. Honestly, I think I have a good chance. I have a good feeling that they will, though. I have a good feeling this time. But unless you have anything to add, I think this is a good place to call it.
I'm good to call it there. We'll come back to you next time with probably more coverage of this NBA Finals and some more exciting general NBA news that we weren't able to get to today. But thanks for listening.
All right. Take care.